Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're concluding our series of Where Are They Now? Primarch Edition with a focus on the Loyalist Primarchs.
You gotta pizzazz that up.
Yeah.
Where are they now?
Well, actually, the best part about in writing this is I realized the traitor Primarchs are all doing a lot better than the Loyalists are.
By far. Yeah. It's not even close.
Mostly just not being dead.
Also, their influence is, well.
Mostly in the not being dead thing.
Yeah, the not being dead things are a huge thing. And or being trapped somewhere or you're.
Yeah.
We'll go into this.
I'm going to warn you all now. I'm super excited about this cast. I like Gilliman. Be ready.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, be ready for that. But before we begin, as always, please continue commenting and liking. You guys are doing a great job. Those of you who are doing it, those of you who aren't, please, but whatever. Don't have to. It's really great. Like I've said numerous times before, I read these comments in the morning when drinking coffee. It makes me laugh. My goal is to kind of get this podcast large enough that I get a note from GW that just says, come on. Stop, because we do have some fun at their expense.
I will be talking to them this weekend. I mean, it'll be in the past, in the cast, but yeah. Now it's in the future.
Yeah.
There you go.
Stop saying this weekend when it's going to be, this episode's going to
come out. I'm not putting out.
Weeks after.
I'm just saying, I didn't put a date on it. I said, for me this weekend.
If you guys want to see me at the grocery store, I'll be there this Thursday at 2 p.m. You can come through.
I consider myself Schrodinger's Brad. I exist and don't exist at the exact same time. You don't know.
Anyway.
that'll make it.
Let me have said, given your health when you're in a box in the ground, we all know.
he doesn't exist. He's
like, yeah, that cat's dead.
Yeah. Schrodinger came back and went, that's a dead.
Yeah, no, this one we can.
For sure. We called it.
Yeah, we called it. Someone. Additionally, for those of you who like the cast and are looking for a place to interact, as we always point out, we have a Discord, totally free Discord. Please, it's in the show notes. If you're looking for a spot to really talk about 40K and at any level, something from as low as, hey, I'm just learning this game, what is it? All the way up through competitive literature advice, painting advice, even Brad's coaching advice, we all have in the Discord. Real big shout out to Kevin, Macy, Brian, Ethan. I'm going to keep pointing out you spell your name wrong. Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David.
Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike.
Well, these guys, they're great. These guys and women are great. They've done an incredible job of reorganizing our Discord. So one of the main things about our Discord was we wanted to get away from Daka, Reddit, a lot of these places where if you don't really know what you're doing or you ask an innocent question, people seem to like want to mock you and be a jackass about it.
I hate that so much.
Yeah, this is not. This is meant to be a place because we recognize a lot of... This is meant to be a place where people can come who are newer to the game and interact with people who are also new but also have experience for the goal to be kind of improve your knowledge and enjoy the game the same way everybody else does. So
and from everything from gaming, we have everything
there. Yeah.
From literature to video games to just 40K lore, there's something going on for everybody. I really do love our Discord.
It's a great Discord. Aside from the Discord, we also have a Patreon. For those of you who've been listening long enough, you know how bad the audio used to be. That's because of Patreon. Patreon has fixed a lot of our audio issues. Patreon is why we have an audio engineer. Patreon is fixed why we're getting sound dampening for the studio soon. Studio, aka my basement. Literally, yeah. Like my weights are over there. My kids' toys are over there. There's about, you know, that's true how story. This works. Yeah. But we're getting some stuff that got to help out for every time Brad puts his Dr. Pepper down, which I called out as he was drinking the Dr. Pepper. I got to watch him very gently put it down, which always makes me laugh.
With my shaky hand, too.
Yeah, if you guys want to help, it's very funny. Whenever you call Brad out for something, he will adjust behavior instantly, and it's very enjoyable.
Yeah. I don't really like how that sounds. I feel like people are just going to follow me around with spray bottles and be like, no, bad Brad.
Also, Dave, if you point out Brad is short, he will sit up. I'm not kidding. He does do that. Yeah, your posture changes.
I'd like to refute that, but no, that's 100% right. Like, there's no chance that that's not true.
Or he'll flex. It's one of those two will happen every time.
Or both.
Often both. So lastly, we do have a website, the40klorecast.com. You can go there. It has links to our Patreon, our Discord. But actually, our merchandise, if you want to get some clothing, we've got some clothing. It's funny. Don't worry. I actually put an effort into it.
I just stole John's hat just so I made sure it was comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it is. So I'm getting one.
I'm very proud of the Tao shirt I put on there about never forget, never forgive. This stupid shield drones. Anyway.
Just want to tell you, the hat's comfortable.
It's a good hat. Also, there's dice, too. And I've used them. And I won. So, haha. Anyway.
That spiraled into weird.
Yeah. Last thing that we always cover is Brad's coaching. For people who are interested in playing 40K, it can be a little bit
daunting to get into.
Yeah, daunting, onerous, whatever term you want to use. And what Brad has is over 10 years of coaching experience at multiple levels. This can be everything from I'm brand new to the game to I'm brand new to playing competitive to I do all those things and I want to be better at it. Brad's there. His goal, though, the nice thing about him is that his goal is to actually not just have you have a better time, but have you make better choices, which allow for you to have a better time. So Brad's goal, though, is to make people have a better time on the tabletop. So if you're looking for coaching, please reach out to him. You can go to our website, you can go to our Discord, or you can keep ruining the amount of spam he gets by making him email him at
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com. I love the fact, by the way, that we cut this out and then people went, we want this to happen.
What I love actually more is none of you get to see what happens. When we used to do this, Brad, he would posture up. He'd put his hand out and speak like it was a Shakespearean play, giving out his email address. And now it's PTSD. Oh. Every time I bring this up, he makes this like sad face of, I am going to get so many emails about lonely 50-year-olds in your area. Anyway, off for the loyalists. Last week, we opened the traders with a quick one, and we're going to save it this week.
I want to say that you're back-to-back weekends of dick move, man.
What? Opening with the quickest one, Ferris yeah. Manus. He's dead. We won't let it die.
Super dead.
Yeah, super dead. He was on the drop site Massacre Istvan 5, and then Fulgrim cut his head off with a demon blade.
Back that up real quick. Not just Fulgrim. Oh, who was Fulgrim to Ferris Manus? Oh, his best friend.
Oh, yeah, I actually forgot if I was right. Ferris was fighting his best friend Fulgrim, who used a demon blade to cut his head off, and then the demon blade possessed Fulgrim for a while. One of like
10 times.
Numerous times.
Weirdly enough, I said 10 times is a ha ha, and I think it is actually 6.
It's 6 or 7. Anyway, that was fun. Let's do a long one. He's big.
So many.
He wears a lot of blue, and he's the best Primarch in the entire game, Gilliman. And when I say that, just understand, I really do. I love Gilliman. And I would argue, and my argument for him is that no Primarch to me is more involved with 40K lore than Gilliman.
Well, especially now.
Yeah.
He launched 8th edition.
Yeah. 30K lore, whatever. 40K lore?
I'm saying, like, modern, because right now we are in the 10th edition of 40K in the game. G-Man got resurrected in the 8th edition, and that was when we started pushing the storyline
up. Let's go back further. I'm sorry.
7th edition.
No, Codex Astartes. That's Gilliman. Where did that come in? That's before first edition.
No, I'm just saying. I was saying modern 40K.
Oh, modern 40K, he's even more powerful. What I'm saying is that he is...
Well, he wrote the book.
Yeah, he wrote the Codex Astartes. Yeah, he restructured the entirety of the Imperium. Yeah, Gilliman's important. And so for those of you who don't like him, I get it.
I want you to know that John talked at me.
I don't get it. Because Brad doesn't like Gilliman. I know that.
I find it boring. He's okay.
Yeah, because you like all the other Primarchs who are rushing off to like, I'm going to go slap chaos in the face. And Gilliman's like, we should feed people.
I feel like people should know that I actually prefer bad decisions at all times.
Yeah, let's focus on that because this is actually important to me. So Gilliman missed the Siege of Terra because he, just like the Lion and Leman, were held up by Alpha Legion and Word Bearers and et cetera, et cetera. So Gilliman was not thrilled about this, and he arrives at Terra with 3,000 capital ships just as the traders are booking out as fast as they could. Now, this is why I like Gilliman, where all of his brothers were ready just to launch themselves after the traders and chase them out of the galaxy.
We're just ready. They did.
Well, they were originally ready to, and they did it anyway.
I'm saying they yeah. did. They just left.
Gilliman looked around, and he realized he's got this incredible fleet. He has the largest, I believe he was at this point the largest legion. It's him and Dark Angels. It's hard for me to remember exactly which one was larger, but they're close.
It's at this point in time.
Yeah. Oh, it's right. Yeah, they were the largest legion. He could have pursued Chaos and done a bunch of damage, but instead he did the right thing. He looked around the Imperium and decided to save the Imperium from itself.
The Imperium was trashed.
It was going to collapse. It was completely going to collapse. So the first thing he does is he secures Terra. He goes through and purges any and all Chaos forces. And because we talk about the Siege of Terra, we forget it was in the Himalayan mountains, which was, you know, the palace. I think they said it was large. They said it was a few thousand square kilometers.
This is the best thing you wrote this week.
Yeah. So for those of us in America, that's about 500,000 Costcos.
Never use the metric system. Yeah,
and if any of you are broad, don't know what a Costco is, that is actually your loss. That rotisserie chicken and that hot dog. Just so much stuff.
Those plates of spirals.
Yeah. Anyway, the problem is that at 500,000 Costcos in size, it's still not the Earth. And so Gilliman and his Ultramarines went down to like Brazil and found the Chaos cultists there and beat the crap out of them.
Gilliman did not have a light touch.
No, that's the thing about Gilliman, because Gilliman gets a lot of grief for being this like bureaucrat. And it's like, yeah, he is. But he's a bureaucrat with the most powerful army in the Imperium. And he uses it accordingly.
Yeah, he did flatline all of this shit.
Yeah. The next thing Gilliman does, though, is reestablish control of the Imperium. And we've discussed this before, too, but I was the drive at home, that the Imperium was run by the Emperor and Malkador. Like, the Lords of Terra, they'd always been there, but they were nothing more than figureheads. When the most powerful being in the galaxy is in charge,
when the Emperor and Malkador were alive,
yeah,
and could possibly just show up.
Yeah, it was just kind of like...
You can't really misbehave that bad.
Well, and it's all the pieces, like, you don't really make decisions is a bigger problem. You're like, oh, we should do, wait for it. Emperor's here. What are we doing, Emperor? You're doing this. Cool, that's what we're doing. Now he's gone. And they genuinely have no... They were not ready for it. Because they were. You take a figurehead, you wrote them.
They sucked from the start.
What I love about Gilliman, though, is that he sees this scenario of these effectively useless Lords of Terra. And he could have, like... giving him a good pep talk, really helped him get through it. Instead, he just made himself Lord Commander of the Imperium.
The best part about him doing this is that there was one,
and he was currently Rogel Dorne, and I expect that Gilliman called himself the Lord Commander. Rogel went, "Hey, I'm the Lord Commander." And then Gilliman pointed at all of Terra and said, "Yeah, you did a really great job of that, Rogel." Yeah,
I'm going to fix some shit, right? If you need me, I'll be fixing things.
Yeah. And so he takes control of the military, which gives him really effectively control of the Imperium. And it's because when we say the military, he's not just commanding the troops. He gets everything that comes into that. All the logistics, all the shipping lanes, everything.
Let's go, because we're going to have to do a little recap on this for Horus Heresy timeline. Yeah. At this particular time, the Imperium was the military, period.
Yeah.
It was just...
Because we went from the Great Crusade straight into the Horus Heresy. Yep. There was no there was no peacetime.
No.
That's it. And so the military was everything. So all of your commerce, trade, logistics, they were all based largely around feeding the military beast. So taking control of the military really put Gilliman in charge
of
everything. And with a galaxy on fire, this is really, really important because people have to get fed. That's what we're talking about here. If he'd just done what other people had done, the food would have stopped flowing. The galaxy, the Imperium probably would have starved to death.
I'll give you this. G-Man is next level in bureaucracy.
Hmm? But not the bad kind of bureaucracy. Not the, like, let's make 5 TPS reports.
No, he's
a logistics mastermind.
To the TPS
reports. Now, the funny thing about this is that the other, like, Primarch brothers who were there with him were not exactly cool with this. They weren't, like, looking for a new boss. And all of a sudden, their brother, who is an equal, effectively, says, "I'm in charge." And my viewpoint of the conversation, because I actually can see him and Leman Russ having this, of Leman Russ just saying, you can't just declare yourself Lord Commander. Why shouldn't I be in charge? And then to which Gilliman says, do you want to sit here at Terra while everyone else goes and punches traitors? And Leman Russ would go, fine, you can be Lord Commander. Someone grab my shiniest ass-kicking boots. We're out of here.
Yep. Like, also, you have to fill out all this paperwork. Yeah, but I don't know. You're
you know what? You do it. I'm.
Do you want a bigger hat? I heard that's how they determine it.
Pederabo went that way. Bye. Like, you know, I got to go do some stuff. And then... once left in charge by his brothers, Gilliman, I think at this point, just decides to be a kind of a dick and goes, hey, I'm going to write the Codex Astartes now.
This went over well.
This was not well received.
Hey, you're going swimming? Here's this anchor.
Yeah. Well, no, it was a good idea. Unlike the Warrior Lodges.
It was, and we'll talk about it when we go into Leman, because he writes the Codex Astartes specifically because he said, too much power in one person's control will lead eventually to corruption. Ultimate power ultimately corrupts. So he breaks everything down, to which a couple of people, cough off Leman, basically
said. We'll get to them in a little bit.
I'm just saying.
This went over. But his concept was good in that if you look at the Space Marine Legions, they were all – it was originally 100,000. Now they're down below 10,000. Side note, but 100,000 soldiers, super soldiers, greatest soldiers in the galaxy, outside of the Sisters.
That's not even the biggest thing. They were self-contained because they had they had a navy, their own navy.
Yep.
They had their own guard detachments.
All of these pieces. And so if a Primarch turns, you have to take on an entire legion. What Gilliman said was, no, we're going to fracture this down and we're going to effectively remove the Primarchs from the top and go down to Chapter Masters. And that way we get lots of small... you know, whatever you call it, groups of military. So if there is a rebellion, they're easier to put down. Sort of is my only issue here, because the Sisters are set up just like the Space Marines.
They weren't at the time. They weren't included in the Codex.
I know, but ADMEC are. I mean.
Yeah, but we already talked about that.
I'm saying is like this only, it was a nice idea, but it only affected the Space Marines.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. And this way, again, I mean, it's a fine idea, I guess, is what I would say.
Fine-ish?
Yeah. Now, that being said, the Primarchs had a pretty solid, hey, what, WTF moment when he did this. Because they were just about to go, again, on their ass-kicking missions and found out, wait, and I got to break my entire legion up? To which 50% of them didn't.
Yep.
But they should have.
No, they shouldn't have.
Yes, they should have.
Biker game for life.
It's not a good situation. Although I guess the lion technically broke his legion in half without even knowing it.
Yes.
True.
Oopsies. Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. He was ahead of the game, actually, technically.
It's planet half without knowing it either.
Now, that being said, the Codex Astartes also affected the Imperial Army. This is when we got the split between the Astra Militarum for intellectual property reasons and Imperial Navy.
IG.
Yeah, which had no models. So I guess we could just call it a Navy. Yeah, intellectual property doesn't matter if you're not going to make any models to patent. So the Astra Militarum even also though got split even further. Before this moment, just for those into the Astra Militarum cast, the regiments were all put into the Imperial Army kind of ad hoc. Now... this is when the regiments came up. And this was, again, designed to control and prevent the spread of rebellion. If a planet were to rebel and be against the Emperor, that planet, those soldiers don't ever work with or associate with soldiers from another planet, so it couldn't spread.
Well, it's a big deal on this because G-Man was, while everybody, all his brothers were going out and effectively beating the shit out of Chaos.
Yeah.
He was reclaiming all the supply lanes mm-hmm. and logistics and reconquering planets. And at first he had a real problem with, I got this planet back, and he'd leave and then he'd have to put the bus in reverse
and
go fix it. So he had to go, how can I stop this as much as possible from happening?
Well, one of my favorite things of this era is this was actually the Gilliman invented the Commissar. That was a Gilliman move because he realized we needed a way to control. Yeah. This whole idea, like, so we have these regiments who are from planets, but I don't, basically Gilliman's people, I don't trust anybody any now. And I don't want to put the different planet regiments together, because if one of them's you know, got chaos, it'll spread to the other like an infection. But what I will do is put one dude in that regiment whose job is to shoot them in the head when they do it.
Yep.
Yeah. So there you go. Gilliman made commissars. Adding to my list of reasons I like Gilliman. It's a cool ass model. Now, the beauty of Gilliman is that once he did all this, the Imperium started getting its footing back. Logistics started working again. Food was flowing. Weaponry was flowing. Everything was moving. So Gilliman began to kind of look outward now. And looking outward also included looking at the wake of a Lehman Russ and Lion of just pure destruction behind them.
The biggest thing about this is I'm going to give him a little fall on this because Gilliman started doing good shit.
Really good stuff.
But he's the person that's holding everything together. When you're the person holding everything together, maybe you don't beam down with the away team.
Yeah, he's still a Primarch. So Gilliman at this moment realizes the Imperium needs more food, more raw materials, more troops. So he grabs, to Brad's point, his legion, which is now multiple legions, multiple chapters, the Navy and the Guard, and starts heading out to start reclaiming worlds and the traitors. Not doing what he should have done, which is order it from behind. He led from the front. Yeah, and it started off pretty well.
The Imperium is holding on by strings, and they are the strings held by G-Man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's a ultra genius.
And this doesn't, it starts off pretty well and then ends pretty badly. So the first one he runs into is Alpha Legion. We talked about this last week. It's called Escrador. And the Alpha Legion were attacking Ultramarines there to try and gain the control of the right side of the galaxy. Gilliman leads them himself. And this is actually kind of a cool story about Gilliman. So Alpharius or Omegron, whichever one was alive at this point, no one knows, set a trap. And the trap was based around he knew how Gilliman functioned. And he planned, well, the Ultramarines are only going to do, they're going to follow the book. And this is how they're going to attack. And when they attack this way, we're going to get them. And Gilliman actually came around the backside in an Alpha Strike squad team and just took them out, took Alpharius out at their headquarters. And as we said last time, killed Alpharius. So Gilliman, pretty tactical. But then there was Thesala, which is when Gilliman decided to take one-on-one.
I need you to
Fulgrim.
If you could hear the marbles shaking in my head right now, this is such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Again, he brought a tiny force down.
Yeah, the story's good, so I don't want to spoil people who want to read it. But if Gilliman falls for a trap, for lack of a better phrase, with Fulgrim.
Like a bad, bad trap.
Yeah, and Fulgrim.
Like an obvious trap.
And in the end, Fulgrim, who, again, Gilliman is a Primarch, so he's a large man, like 3 meters, probably, you know, a ton and a half. Fulgrim's 2 to 3 times that size with twice the arms, half the legs, but all the wings and a giant demon blade. So he uses the demon blade and he ends up slitting Gilliman's throat with it, at which point the Ultramarines see this, grab Gilliman and his body and take it back with them. They shove him in a stasis pod, and then they shove the stasis pod in McCraig. And for 10,000 years,
he's in a stasis pod.
He just hangs out there. That was the end of Gilliman's story until 2017 or so. It might have been 16.
Weirdly enough, this took a little while, though. Gilliman was putting shit together for a while in the Horus Heresy.
Yeah, but this happened in M32.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The writing's weird, because when you read it, you're like, wow, Gilliman got a ton of stuff. I mean, to be fair, he's a Primarch, so he doesn't sleep. He got a lot done in a couple hundred years, basically. And then he did a 9,000-year nap.
Yep. And then we had the end of 7th edition, the Gathering Storm books, and we got G-Man back.
And so we're going to do
a good storyline, too.
Yeah, we're going to do a whole cast of storyline. So if you feel like, you know, not satiated by what we're about to do here, neither are we. I want to spend a lot of time on Yunari. I love this story. So Belisarius Call, Saint Celestine, and a few others who were on Cadia at its destruction ended up jumping into the Webway with some new Eldar friends that they'd made. While traveling in the Webway, Call was able to perfect a suit of power armor he'd been working on forever called the Armor of Fate. And this armor made its wearer impervious to poison. That's what it does, Brad. It's what it does. The regular Space Marine armor couldn't do this, obviously. But luckily, this one suit of armor.
This pisses me off so much. It's just,
I didn't write the book. Someone else did. It actually did all, additionally have the power of the Emperor and the warp in and of itself. Let's just say the next part of this story is longer than I'm about to say. They came out of the webway on McCraig, walked up to the temple in which Gilliman's body is being stored in stasis, and tried to just walk into it.
Yeah, Marnius Kalgar was not super.
Yeah, cool. Marnius Kalgar was on team. I'm going to murder you with my double power fists.
Like, also, why are there Xenos here?
Yeah, exactly. Also, there's Eldar. You're not bringing Eldar into my Primarch. But eventually, they let him do it. And they load.
It's a weirdly short speech, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't.
They were like, come on, man. And yeah. He was like, excellent argument.
They went with pretty please. And that was enough. Yeah. So they do let him in. They take Gilliman's basically dead body and they put him in the armor of fate. And instantly Gilliman wakes up. And well refreshed, by the way. But he was in a little bit of a mood. He woke up. As he wakes up, the Black Legion attacks. And Gilliman puts on his boots of mighty ass kicking. I was
just stealing my line. Dude, he gets up and just goes.
This is awesome. Yeah.
What?
No. And wanders out there and just beats the hell out of this Black Legion invasion.
That's not even the cool. I mean, that battle's super cool. However, G-Man goes, man, I'm assuming after I was felled that you continue to do exactly what I was doing and reforging the Imperium into the enlightened, amazing galaxy spanning empire that we were going
to. And then he looked around McCraig and he, why is this place shitty? Why?
Yeah. And then he basically went, oh, let me download the last 10,000 years of news and just went, yeah, I'm going to beat the shit out of everybody.
Yeah. He did. Downloaded all the goings on the Imperium and just went, I'm going to Terra.
Like right now.
And started going back towards Terra. At which point, this resurrection of a Primarch, let's just say it wasn't an easy path. He has to get through Magnus, a bloodthirster. A
named thirster.
Yeah. Kairos Fateweaver. Also, but luckily he did have, and by the way, he murdered that bloodthirster horribly. Kairos was a little bit closer.
He does have a posse of peeps with him.
Well, he did have Yvrain, numerous Harlequins. Cypher shows up randomly. Sisters of Silence, Custodes.
Four different chapters showed up at some point in time.
Yeah, all to help him reach his final destination. He then gets back to Terra. Him and Trajan Valoris enter the Emperor's Chamber. And I'll put up, Gilliman went into the Emperor's Chamber pretty pissed off. The Emperor apparently does wake up and speaks to them while in there. No record of what was said, and Gilliman and Trajan aren't telling, but Gilliman comes out of the chamber more angry than he went in the chamber. Comes out and makes himself now the Lord Commander of the Imperium, as well as the Imperial Regent, which is also known as the Dictator of the Imperium.
Yep.
Yeah. There is no one more powerful in the Imperium than Gilliman. Not even close.
Remember all the stuff he did when he was breaking stuff apart? Well, he just took control of the entire Imperium.
Yeah, all of it's under me now. And he's a benevolent dictator, though. He's like the Watchers of the Dark versus Nurglings.
I mean, the Lords of Terra didn't think he was benevolent.
Yeah. What's your viewpoint on them again?
I hate them so much. I was so happy when they tried to turn on him and Trajan.
Yeah, and they just was like, you know, I'll just behead all of you.
Well, he basically did. So
not all of them.
Not all of them. Yes. True. Not everyone.
Not every single one of them.
They did think they were slick.
Didn't work well.
And then no.
Yeah, didn't work well. Still, I mean, they also went after Gilliman and Trajan.
I mean, they were in a room with Trajan while they tried to turn on him.
Yeah.
Well, they also thought Trajan was turning on
Gilliman,
and then he was like, "Yeah, that was never happening."
Yeah, here's my sword, actually my spear sword. But anyway, so Gilliman then tries to right the ship. So him and Call work together. They finalize the deployment of the Primaris project. So he just effectively rearms the Space Marine force with better troops and weapons.
This is a big thing because they make a shit ton of new Marines.
Yeah,
new Marines. Huge.
Who are bigger, stronger, and faster.
Yeah. The Indominus Crusade is the biggest, it might even be bigger on scale than the original Crusades were.
Yeah, I'm still mad about because they, you know what, Chaos players, boo you. So this was great. They made the Primaris Marines in 8th edition. And they had two wounds. And every other Space Marine had one wound. And the Chaos players lost their minds until 9th edition releases. And now they're all the same. And I don't like that. I'm sorry. Deal with it. I don't like it. I think Primaris Marines, I'm okay with the Primaris Marines being bigger, stronger, faster than Chaos Marines and regular Marines. Not then. What are the infected chaos called?
Possessed?
Not possessed, but, just dude who's been in the warp, whatever. Anyway, the next thing Gilliman does is he writes what's called the Codex Imperialis, where the Codex Astartes rewrote the military structure of the Imperium. The Codex Imperialis rewrote the Imperium itself. And it actually, again, guy's a master, just killed a lot of bureaucracy and the redundancy that was making the Imperium stagnate. It allowed the Imperium to actually move a lot quicker.
Well, he's also trying to work from inside.
Yeah.
Because his original thoughts were, I'll just destroy all of this. And then he gets convinced, hey, it's just too big to devastate.
And also there's a lot of good pieces to it. It's stuff like he pulled a lot of power away from Imperial governors. He started pulling power away from the ecclesiarchy. He starts making it so that, your power is derived from what you're doing for the Imperium, which was a much better way to do it. After that, Gilliman declares the first of his crusades, which is the Indominus Crusade, where it's just, he's looking at the galaxy. This is, again, post the... this is post Abaddon breaking Cadia.
Rift?
Yeah, chaos is running rampant throughout it. And Gilliman just went, no, those are not chaos worlds. Those are Imperium worlds.
To set the table for where G-Man is, because this gives us into modern time, G-Man comes up. The Imperium is not the Imperium that he left. What I mean? It is all ultra religious, which is anti what he thought. And it is just layer upon layer of nonsense. And, a bunch of things he never knew existed are right up on the gates.
Well, the other thing, too, is also the Imperium was losing a lot. And under Gilliman, the Imperium, the difference is before Gilliman took control, the Imperium was basically just a propaganda machine where worlds, systems would disappear and the Imperium would be like, it was a solar flare.
Yeah, or it never existed.
Yeah,
that was never a thing.
Exactly, and what happens is that, but the Imperial citizens knew. They knew that the Imperium was maybe not losing, but they were dying.
They were. Yeah. We were getting crushed.
The citizens may not have known that, but under Gilliman, began reclaiming worlds.
Yeah.
The Imperium started to win again once Gilliman came back.
And to me, before he came back, we were getting crushed by Chaos. We were getting crushed by the Tyranids. We're getting smashed by Necrons because no one would acknowledge they existed.
Exactly. And Gilliman just was like, no, we're going to. And for the first time, Imperial citizens see a light. It's a very distant light at the end of the tunnel, but it's a light. This then, of course, takes the back foot to a horrifyingly aggressive Tyranid invasion of the galaxy. And what's Gilliman do? Nope. He marshals the forces and takes the Imperium to go systematically destroy each and every tendril, which for those of you who play Space Marine 2, that's the backdrop there. You're part of this crusade, the Leviathan. Is it Leviathan?
This is Leviathan now.
Yeah, we're in Leviathan now. This is also while taking out Chaos Incursions, Jukari Raids, Necron Tomb Worlds, whatever the hell the tower up to.
He's putting out fires across the entire galaxy. Yeah.
And effectively too. He's not just...
pushing forward. Yeah,
before he came in, they're being pulled in 50 different directions. Now he's here. And he's like, no, we're still being pulled into 50 different directions, but we're going to win 48 of them.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's Gilliman. He does have a nice little piece we're going to get to later, is that he's no longer the only Primarch supporting the Imperium, which is a nice change.
It's a big deal because not only is he powerful, but he brought a bunch of forces with him.
Yeah. And we'll get to them in a little bit. But before we do, Let's get this out of the way. Lehman Russ. This is Brad's.
Oh.
This is Brad. Well, actually, no, it's Vulcan you like more, but we're pretty close.
It is very close in both.
It's very close.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So we just talked about how Gilliman stayed behind at the end of the Siege of Terra to rebuild the Imperium.
You know who didn't? The Great Wolf.
Yeah. He had some stuff to do, which was, and everything he had to do involved punching and kicking traitors.
And he does a bananas job of it.
Oh, he's exceptional.
If you're looking for someone's ass to get kicked, you do call the Space Wolves.
You do.
Are they good at policing, trafficking, bureaucracy? I mean, anything.
Leaving
that's
a
not...
planet that's actually functional afterwards?
No.
Yeah, no.
No, but if you just want a W?
You get the W, yeah. I mean, Lehman was very happy to give Gilliman the reins of the Imperium until he got his telegram.
I mean, he sent one back.
Yeah.
But it was just a picture of his butt sitting on the fax machine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He gets a telegram of hey, I'm breaking up the legions. This is the Codex Astartes. You have to follow it. And Lehman
did not.
Lehman very politely said, no, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Very politely.
Very politely.
Pinkies up, said it, as he's holding his monocle.
Yeah. I mean, there was actually some interesting reasons behind that, namely that you cannot draw space wolves from any planet other than Fenris. It doesn't work very well.
Also, you can't do the bananas kind of shit that the space wolves do without a lot of support.
Yeah. So Lehman, at this stage, is pretty singular in purpose and thought, and that was tracking down every single one of his fallen brothers and bringing them to justice. The problem that Lehman ran into, though, with that was that they were all inside the Eye of Terror.
And his legion said, we can't go into the Eye of Terror. That's the Immaterium. You can't go there. So Lehman, this is actually part of it. This is canon.
Yeah.
Lehman throws a giant party in one of the great halls.
Yep.
Gets bonkers nuts and effectively just goes, deuces, bros. I'm going to go beat up the Eye of Terror.
Yeah.
By myself.
Which he did.
Yeah. And then he also just ignores the laws of physics and was like, the map says it's like super close. I'll just walk there.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't say how he got there.
No,
he
it just says, yeah, they had a big party and he went out for milk and cigarettes and never came back.
He did not come back.
Yeah. And so that's it.
13th Legion went after him.
Yep. Because the Space Wolves do still, all right, I do find this stupid, and I'm just going to go ahead and call it. So there's something called a Great Hunt, in which case the Space Wolves get together and go on a hunt to go track down their Primarch somewhere in the galaxy for no reason.
Yeah, well,
and to no success.
The only thing that pisses me off is like the whole lore was when the 13th Legion came back, Russ was going to be with him.
Yeah.
The Wolfen and everybody else came back, and we don't have Russ. We should get Russ. Last year, actually, she got at Russ 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What I will say is that the expectation is that Russ is not dead, because if he were to die, you'd see it in the Space Wolves. They'd feel it. This is like a termination. Yeah, he's not dead. But where he is, it's probably somewhere in the warp. And when we get the Korax, you'll discover that may not be a good thing.
Also, again, we know the time works wildly different. So he might think that he left last night.
True. All right, let's do a quick one. Sanguinius. Also very dead.
Ultra dead.
Yeah. I mean.
Space Jesus.
Yeah. We'll do a Blade Angels cast. I don't have much else to say about Sanguinius.
He is so wildly OP.
Well, no, he is not. He was.
Yeah. But he is. I mean, at the time, he was the best, the fairest. He has angel wings.
Mm.
He was like a rock star.
Gilliman
was laughably popular compared to Sanguinius.
Jesus. I just want to do it real quick. Like Gilliman. Actually, the lion's close.
No.
Really?
A lot of the stuff.
Oh, you're right, because Sanguinius can fly. You're right. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
It will also, the fact is, the lion's a bummer.
Yeah.
Sanguinius is the person that you put up to talk to ever.
Sure. I fell asleep the first time I read the lion's book. the original, whatever the Horus Heresy book was. I was like, this is light years boring.
Yeah, he's very grim. There's a reason that there are special rules called Grim Demeanor.
Yeah.
And, well, the Legion got blasted, and it has been. They've been suffering from the rage, the Black Rage, since. Yeah. Since. So, like, him being dead was a big deal. He was OP. He was ridiculous.
And now he's not anymore. So let's talk about someone a bit more fun to me. Korax, also known as how Brad was able to infiltrate Centurion Dreadnoughts.
Yep. Raven Guard. The best part about this is they just refuse to accept that he's an invisible demon prince. But
no, they accept it. It's in the books. So let's get there.
Yeah,
so,
the Legion doesn't.
They don't know about it.
I mean, people know, and there's a lot of people. This isn't like a super secret. Like, no one refuses to acknowledge it. This is if you had Bigfoot sitting next to you and you went, I don't think I'm going to take a picture of this. He's playing PlayStation right now in my basement.
Meh. That's what I'd say. So let's dive into this. So after Istvan 5, Korax and the Raven Guard are barely functioning. I mean, the term that comes to mind is they were decimated, but it's actually the inverse, where 9 out of 10 are dead.
It's even worse. Look what they have, 50?
Yeah, it was nothing. It was a few
handfuls. Nobody.
So, but this is the reason I bring this story up is that this is a really weird piece of the Emperor. The Emperor actually got involved with Korax and the Raven Guard in a positive way, which is not something he does. He actually took a portion of his consciousness, the Emperor, away from the Magnus destroyed Webway, the Astronomicon, and whatever else he was working on to actually talk to Korax directly. And he told Korax to help rebuild his Legion. All of his Primarch stuff was still functional.
Was just sitting in the lab.
Yeah. It's like any dad has like a shed. It's full of like stuff he doesn't need anymore, but doesn't want to throw away. Except like the Emperor's thing is how to fuse warp with living beings.
Yeah, and I've got a little bit advanced.
And I've got a collection of power cords, the things I don't own anymore. So, you know, 6 1 half dozen of the other. So the Emperor tells Korax where he can find the project, how to reactivate it. However, classic Emperor, he also tells him the place is has a very complicated and advanced guard system in front of it, and he doesn't have the time to turn it off. So Korax is going to have to do this. So blah, 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 trials and tribulations.
In my mind, though, as he completes all this, the Emperor looks in his pocket and goes, oh, I had just a beeper here.
Yeah, you press this button.
Yeah, like, it just disarmed the system.
The most powerful psychic being in the galaxy, what couldn't it just use his mind to say, oh, if Korax shows up, let him in.
Yeah.
And then instead, Korax has to, like, you know, do cartwheels through lasers.
The lasers.
Yeah, to get all this stuff in. Like, oh, I've got it. But anyway, Korax does this and then returns back to his home planet of Deliverance, which I'm assuming is not named after the movie. And the cool thing about this, what he's got is with the Primarch project, it's no longer organ implantation. He could actually vat grow an entire Marine.
I love this, but I hate this at the same time, because why were they doing this the whole time? He makes like a Legion, like now.
I know.
You're like,
it's the same with the Grey Knights, who are imbued with the Emperor instead of being imbued with chaos entities. Like, who knew?
He pumps out Marines at 100% rate.
This part's cool, though. So they take this and they decide they make 500 new Marines. But, and we've mentioned Alpha Legion in the past, Alpha Legion have this ability to infiltrate, and they play a long game. The Alpha Legion actually infiltrated some of the original Marines who survived Istvan 5 were actually Alpha Legion, who are posing as Raven Guard. So the Alpha Legion, so they play a long game. And what they did was they actually tainted the genomes of the Raven Guard being used in this experiment with a mutation that was made from demon blood. So it seems like a bit excessive, but whatever. And what comes out of this are these 500 Space Marines are horrifically mutated. They've got horns, they've got wings, they've got fangs. They can actually spit acid. Just kidding. They can't do that. No Space Marine can. And these, they're horrifying mutations. Now, I will say, they end up actually keeping them, though.
Yeah, and their Chapter Master's cool as hell, and I played him.
Yeah. And, you know, they become the Raptor Squads.
That's what I brought.
Yeah, if you want to build a really cool army, build a Raven Guard Raptor Squads. Although, I mean, technically, Korax did kill them all.
Also, I'm told they're green.
Oh, are they green? Yeah. Bam, if you want. Do you? But with these 500 mutated space marines, Korax decides to just blow the project up.
Which, this is the part that I didn't like, because it clearly got sabotaged. Just do it again, man. And don't have, in. How about this? Have somebody test for demon blood.
You and your ideas. Better is to give up and not try again. And so what happens is that Korax and his legion begins working to slowly but steadily build the legion up piece after piece the old way. So finding recruits, doing organ implantation, it's going to take, and this takes thousands of years for them to get back to where they were.
He gets so emo because of this.
Yeah. Now Korax was always.
He was always the emo.
He was always, yeah, because he was the good emo.
I'm still going with the Smith.
And Kurz was the bad emo.
You guys can just Google who the hell they are.
Yeah, no one cares. To go with it, he actually, the thing is, you say the Smiths, but he kind of looks like the lead singer of The Cure.
True.
Eventually, Korax's depression gets so bad that he just locks himself in a castle for a year. And then after locking himself in the castle, just walks out.
It gives John's favorite last line.
He just says nevermore.
And well, then, as quote the Raven.
Because he's the Raven. It's not clever, GW. That's lame. That's just lame. This should have been the end of his story, but then we get actually awesomeness. So let's dig back in.
Super awesome.
Yeah.
Because Korax, who already was, I mean, out of the Primarchs, was by far the ultimate stealth ninja, and then he gets juiced up by the warp.
Well, you're jumping ahead. You're set the story. Let's set the stage first before you jump into that.
Before we even went there, he was still.
Well, no one heard from him. So that's right. No one has heard from him forever.
I'm saying before he even went into the warp, he's.
Oh, I see. But yeah, so the Raven Guard. You're right. The Raven Guard are masters of fighting from the shadows. Right. But anyway, the Word Bearers. Are, as we talked in the last one, they are reclaiming territory and they're growing within the warp. And one of the word bearer, like, I don't care, leaders, was building a giant complex to honor Lorgar. Then all of a sudden, all of the word bearer Astartes just started being found killed. And not like, oh, he's dead. Like, he's ripped to pieces.
He was doing predator stuff. He was pulling out spines, taking trophies. He was just doing crazy shit.
And so there's a dark apostle who's overseeing a lot of this. And while standing there, discovers that the shadows themselves are rising up to kill them. So, yeah, he kind of runs away. And while running away from this death shadow, he calls out to Lorgar for help. And as we said, at this stage, Lorgar is a full-fledged demon prince of chaos. And Lorgar, in classic Lorgar fashion... Still
50% discount.
Yeah, exactly. He still can't fight. So Lorgar shows up as a demon prince, ready to kick ass and take names. And the shadow in front of him, he realizes, is Korax, which is cool. The second part is what's way cooler about it, which is that Korax, after years upon years... thousands upon thousands of years in the warp, the Immaterium stripped away what they describe as basically the appearance of humanity that the Emperor put on them. This is the first time they ever call out what a Primarch really is. A Primarch is warp made manifest. They're demons.
In physical form.
Yeah, the Emperor made.
He effectively demons. Took warp.
Or actually more no, chaos
he,
gods.
Well, it's more. What he did is he took Immaterium, the warp.
Yep.
And he encased it in flesh. Yeah.
And what happened, so Korax, on the other hand, has been in the Immaterium so long that all the Immaterium around him has melted away.
It's also, you remember, the Immaterium, the warp essence itself is about thought.
Mm-hmm.
He became what his inner being was.
Exactly. And so, needless to say, Lorgar, who's all proud of himself for finally being promoted to Demon Prince, is fighting...
A wildly
better god, basically. Yeah. A god. And Korax beats him silly. And Lorgar pulls a Sir Robin.
Run away.
And bravely runs away and actually dives behind an obsidian door. And this is actually one of my favorite lines. Korax then yells through the door that I have your scent now. And I will, if it takes me 1,000 years, I will find you and kill you.
Yeah, I'll never stop.
I'll never stop. And Lorgar properly runs away.
And hides and just says no. And Koryx is there to this day.
Yeah.
He's somewhere in the warp. He's the warp boogeyman for all the Chaos guys. Because Koryx is doing a reunion tour of death. Mm-hmm. Going, hey, man, I'm selling death. You want some? Too bad if you said no, because I'm coming in.
After Koryx, let's move on to who I refer to as the most forgettable Primarch.
You do hate him.
Check it out. He's useless. Check it out. And I'm not trying to be a dick, guys. There's nothing on him. There are basically no books. He plays no role in modern 40K at all.
In the Horus Heresy, he did some stuff.
Yeah. Modern 40K.
This is the worst part, is that he has ignoble. He doesn't even die or anything. He's just gone.
Yeah. I mean, so ready? When people are going to be like, what are you talking about? Watch this. So he was from a planet called Chigorian. Post Horus Heresy, they go on the scouring. While on the scouring, Khan and his buddies are beating up Chaos. They find out that his home planet of Chigorian had been attacked by the Drukhari. He goes back. The Drukhari raid. Tens of thousands of citizens are gone and were taken to the Dark Realm. Jagadai gets upset and declares that he will avenge his people.
He vowed.
Vowed. And he jumps into the maelstrom.
Yep, there you go.
The end.
He's in the Dark City.
Maybe.
Somewhere.
That's the joke. And so all we have right now are jokes that he's somewhere in the webway. Because the idea is he went into the webway to track down the Archon that raided his homeworld. But he's never come back. It's been 10,000 years. And so the joke is that he got there, found the arenas,
and just hung out.
And hung out. This is awesome. And now he's just living there with just, you know, married to some, like, you know, witch.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing there. That's it. That's it. That's Khan. Sorry. Sorry.
He had some cool defense, though.
Sure.
He was in Terra.
Oh, he was there. He was totally part of the lore. Then someone went, I don't feel like writing this anymore. And then just basically wrote him out of the books.
Let's talk about my boy.
Let's do Vulcan. All right. Much more interesting. So just like Liam and Russ, at the end of Heresy, Vulcan also disappeared.
Yes, but he gave a bunch of cryptic.
The difference is everyone knows Liman went into the warp.
Well, Vulcan did have a tough time. Old Conrad did torture and kill him every day.
Multiple times a day.
Yeah, like a lot.
For a while. But anyway, Vulcan disappears. However, before he left, he told his legion that in times of great need, he would reappear. And
he did.
Oh, did he? So War of the Beast. This is maybe one of the most badasses of all the Imperium in this battle. So the world is called Caldera. It's during the War of the Beast. Is under invasion by orcs. And Caldera has no space marines. It has no sisters. It just has Imperial Guard, and not even a lot of them. However, Caldera has a history. During, I think it was the Heresy, it was a Great Crusade.
Great Crusade.
Yeah. Vulcan destroyed Caldera. He
blasted the planet. And here's the thing about the Salamanders. The Salamanders are close to the good guys that you're going to get because they actually give a shit about collateral damage. They're effectively a shit ton of paladins.
Yeah.
And he held a vow that he was always going to protect this planet.
And he did. This planet is under complete assault from the orcs, and out of nowhere, Vulcan appears with his thunder hammer.
He appears like Infinity War with Thor.
Well, this is awesome. Yeah. So he's got his thunder hammer and just starts killing orcs, thousands of orcs at a time, until eventually the orcs overwhelm him, kill him, at which point he insta regenerates, got back up, picked up his hammer, and went back to killing. He single-handedly stopped a full orc invasion.
Because he's a badass.
Yeah. He's also
by far the biggest of the Primarchs. Yes.
My favorite part about this is then the bigger problem with Caldera is that there's actually a gravity generator that orcs built to turn it into basically an attack moon. So he just walks into the gravity generator.
With his hammer.
Smashes it with his hammer, blows it up, blows himself up, and then gets regenerated back to life.
And then he just walked away.
Yeah. It all ends, though, with it's still the War of the Beast. And there is, you know, a beast. Vulcan goes to Ulanar, now called Armageddon, or actually soon to be called. It's a formerly called Armageddon. They've moved it, or the other way around. He's in whatever way it is. I lose track of at which point what it's called. It's the same planet. There, he joins a bunch of space marines to go hunt down and kill the beast. They walk into the final complex, and the beast turns out to be a 10-meter high orc war boss, to which Vulcan turns to the other space marines and says, yeah, you guys can boogie out. I got this. Yeah,
he's like, I'll take the big guy.
Yeah. And they all do. And he does. Vulcan smashes the beast with his thunder hammer.
Well,
and
he got juiced up. Yeah. He effectively sucked all the energy out of the generator.
Yeah. And yeah, he slams him into a generator and blows up the generator and Vulcan and the beast.
Which also, when we say power generator, it was more like nuclear reactor.
Yeah. I mean, this is, and so this again kills Vulcan, but we know he's not dead. Vulcan's due to come back at any time, just whenever he's in most need.
And you also have you have to go into it a little bit. There's been multiple, I'll get yelled at for this because there is the one canon thing, but I don't believe it completely. You got to remember about how sane Vulcan is, because Vulcan's had some horrific deaths. And obviously with the Night Hunter, he had.
Vulcan has died thousands of times.
Right.
Thousands.
And it's a big deal in this. And then we've got Coral Engine stuff, you know what I mean? When Angron blew that up, they could have affected the Salamander Legion. So where Vulcan is, he's alive, but I don't exactly know.
That's the difference. Whereas the Korax is never coming back. He is a warp entity now.
Yeah, well, he's a lore now.
Yeah.
Lehman. There's the Ballad of Korax.
Yeah. Lehman is a maybe. I think Vulcan's the most the easiest one for them to bring back.
Yeah. Because they have the whole thing when they get all the artifacts of Vulcan that he will just be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So where is he?
Somewhere.
Somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's alive for sure. Well,
that's enough about lame Primarchs. Let's have some fun. Let's talk about Rogel Dorn.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Rogel loved two things in this world, building a fort and building a bigger fort while being grumpy.
And being not fun ever.
He's never fun. But that being said, after the Siege of Terra, Rogel took that pretty hard.
Well, it's that and then being wildly tricked and having to be saved by his brothers after Perturabo got the upper hand on him.
Well, yeah,
pretty quick after that.
But even before that, Rogel, I mean, the issue with Rogel is, let's go through the Rogel failings. First off, Horus and the fleet enter the galaxy successfully.
We also smoke fest all his defenses.
Yeah, then they blow up the Luna thing.
Yeah, well, he also said that they weren't going to make it past Saturn.
Yeah, and they get through Luna. They land, they're outside the Imperial gates. Then the Emperor teleports above the Vengeful Spirit. Rogel's there with him to go up there, but gets lost and takes too long to get
lost.
Yeah. And then doesn't arrive on the bridge until after Sanguinius is killed and the Emperor is basically slain.
Yeah. Yes.
So Rogel's not feeling like this great defender.
No, at he this got point. Zero medals for this.
Yeah. Then he does this weird thing. So he decides, he tries to meditate and he tries solitude and they're not enough. So he builds himself what they call the pain glove.
Which makes no sense.
This thing, it's a body suit of mesh. And when you wear it, it puts your body in an unending agonizing pain.
He basically puts on fishhook chainmail armor.
Yeah. And just wears it. And he uses this to help himself meditate better and commune. And he decides that for whatever reason, his legion needs to be redeemed, but it can be redeemed, but only through action.
This is effectively, this is the beginning of what would become the Black Templars.
Yeah.
Continue.
Oh, yeah. They head out into the galaxy, mostly on an Iron Warrior ass-kicking fest. And as we said, walks brutally into a trap.
Like,
immensely. And again, as Brad was saying earlier, has to be saved by Gilliman. So he failed the Emperor. He failed the Imperium. And now he also failed himself in killing Perturabo and the Iron Warriors. So what happens next is just kind of weird, for lack of a better phrase. Dorne, when Gilliman rolls out the Codex Astartes.
Is bent.
Gives Gilliman the middle finger. That's what he does.
Yep.
But after having to get his butt saved by Gilliman again, he goes, all right, well, whatever. But instead of like 10 chapters, they go into three. The Imperial Fist, later.
He gets around this. He uses a bunch of loopholes on this. He's like, I'm going to split the stuff up. But also he considers the Black Templars to be a crusade amongst themselves. That's how he got away with that one.
And the Crimson Fist?
That was
the Imperial Fist. That's what I mean. He makes the Imperial Fist, the Crimson Fist, and the Black Templars. One of those three sees regular tabletop play. Crimson Fists are actually annoying on the tabletop more because they look a lot like Space Marines or Ultramarines from a distance. And you're like, wait, which one? Oh,
but they got Pedro.
Yeah, no. But that part's cool. I'm thinking the color scheme throws me off when I see it. Takes me a second.
Those never bother me.
I know. Didn't notice. they had red hands. Anyway, over time, it actually does split further. You do get quite a few additional foundings, but out the gate, he doesn't do the full split. He just does a small split. The part of the Dorn story that's weird is actually his death, mostly in just how inconsequential it is.
Nothing battle.
Yeah, Dorn is just leading his fists into battle near the Eye of Terror. Abaddon shows up with his fleet. Dorn and his guys jump aboard Abaddon's main ship, and that wasn't a good decision. He dies.
Yeah, how he dies? I don't know.
No record, but somehow, he was dying, someone cut his hand off, or all that was left with his hand, and they took it back. And now they were always called the Imperial Fists. Now they have the fist of their Primarch.
Also, it doesn't say how he got killed. Somebody tell me I'm wrong with this.
Doesn't.
He
just gets killed.
Yeah. They have no rhyme, no reason. He just doesn't make it.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the story. I wish I had more.
Yeah. I'm not that mad. Screw you.
Yeah, no, but it's just a weird thing. It's like, oh, it's this. And then, oh yeah, he's dead now.
Well, they didn't even make it an epic fight. One thing the dude did do was kick ass.
Yeah.
And he died in a mysterious random raid.
Yeah.
Wasn't for nothing.
For no reason. Yeah. No value at all.
Just none.
All right. But let's close on a high note.
El León.
The lion. So the newest and the greatest Primarch lore, I would argue. So
in his book's badass. His return book. No, when he does the whole walks.
Oh, no, it's fine.
The forest walks and stuff. I like anything that pushes the story forward. I do like that.
No, you like 80s action movies.
Well, that too.
And that's what this is.
I mean, 100% of it.
It's like
he took the fallen and made them the risen.
It's like 30% montage.
I mean, he does gather up the band.
Like I'm actually like that book should come with like a soundtrack just play behind you of just pure montage music over and over again.
It is great because
like the A-Team music just playing over and over again.
He collects everybody to get back. We'll get it.
We'll get there. All right, let's go with this. So we covered the Dark Angels cast. A quick recap: End of the Heresy. The Lion went on a rampage, and I mean hardcore rampage. If you're Chaos, I think it's worse if you saw the lion than Lehman.
Oh, the lion was just bent.
Yeah, like I don't like anyone who's even like smiled at someone in Chaos is taking a beating today. So, but before the Heresy kind of really got going, his homeworld of Caliban got totally engulfed in a warp storm. At some point during the scouring, it might have been now, but I don't remember exactly when. The warp storm just dissipates. And so the Dark Angels, who haven't been home in hundreds of years, rush back to Caliban to go check on it. And as soon as they get into orbit around Caliban, they get attacked from the surface of Caliban. So the Lion and the Dark Angels go on another butt-kicking crusade and discover that Luther, who's the Lion's adoptive older brother, basically, had turned to Chaos.
Of course he did. He just had tried to kill, not just, at the time, when the he lion. Sent him home, the Lion had sent, because he tried to kill him, and for whatever reason, he sent him home.
Yeah, we went over this. I'm not diving back into my hatred of the Luther writing. But anyway, the Lion confronts Luther, just the Dark Angels fleet bombards the planet. And the planet gets broken to pieces, and the Lion is nowhere to be found. They found Luther.
Yeah.
The reason behind this is that as the planet was breaking apart, the Watchers in the Dark, who are effectively good demons.
Nerdlings.
Yeah, they're little nerdlings. Grabbed his body and took it to a pocket dimension.
In the middle of the planet.
Yeah. But it's in the middle, but it's a dimension, though. So things mean in the middle of the planet.
Yeah,
it's
like, yeah. Kind of is. It goes with the planet, though.
Yeah, and they shove the lion's body into a stasis. And that way his body and his soul can heal and then be vitalized and actually improved by the planet itself. At the same time, the Legion is now split between Dark Angels and the traitors who are known as the Fallen. This is something that only the Dark Angels and the Emperor know, by the way. And not even all the Dark Angels, only the...
Inner Circle.
Inner Circle, yep. So for the last 10,000 years, the Dark Angels have been doing whatever the Imperium needs of them,
I think it's more also doing what the Emperor needs to do, because their main thing is smoking the Fallen.
But they're doing it largely because they're trying to hide their horrible story. I mean, they're the only... Technically, they're the only surviving traitor legion in that regard. Now, fun thing about the Fallen that's important, it comes up a lot now. They're not like the Chaos Marines and the other legions, because the Lion never gave his soul or the soul of his legion over to a Chaos God.
100%. And one of the bigger things is a lot of the Fallen are only the Fallen because they happen to be standing next to the people that betrayed.
Right.
Because they didn't know. Like half these guys, we did this in our cast.
Yeah.
We're just dudes on patrol. And then the planet started getting bombed.
Yeah, they were dudes on patrol who were loyal to the Dark Angels. Luther was the head of the Dark Angels for them. So therefore, whatever, what am I supposed to know? So some of the Fallen obviously have embraced chaos and turned evil. Others are like independent operators. Like they're basically pirates, like the outcast Eldar. But there's a bunch of them who I like more in the story, who are actually out there, they're actually still loyalists, and they're trying to attain for their fall. And they've been searching for a redemption. So now we move to, I don't know, middle of 2023, and the Lion wakes up. Yeah, the Lion wakes up. And sort of, it's fantasy novel style. That's why Brad likes it.
I love tropes. I do, though. I'm so lame. I am pumpkin spice latte. I am the basic... of Brad's.
I hate this so much. So anyway, so he wakes up. He has, of course, no idea where he is, who he is, any memories whatsoever. So he just wanders around. And while wandering
into the mist, thank you very much. Remember, it's the mist near the water. Get it straight.
I'm so dumb.
Because it looks like his home, his original, you know, where he was home.
Yeah, it's like the old VGA video games I played, where now he eventually runs into a member of the Fallen, who's one of the good members of the Fallen. And upon talking to them, all of the Lion's memories return.
Well, you gotta remember also that he's corrupted by the False Emperor, and he meets the spirit of the Emperor, maybe?
Yeah. This is just, it's such a lame journey. I know you do. Brad's like twirling back and forth in the chair and smiling. And I'm just here like, this is so lame. But anyway.
It's like, it gave me his book gave me the feel like the original 80s Excalibur.
I know, that's what it was. It wasn't the original. It's like, it's the book gave you the feel of the complete ripoff of 80s Excalibur that it was.
Yeah, it just, but I like the Lion coming back.
Oh, no, I love the Lion coming back. And then what they did with him next was kind of funny. So the Lion discovers he's got like a new ability, and that ability is galaxy-wide teleportation.
Force leap.
Yeah. So he's got, so after, you know, this 10,000 years, he's actually living now. Well, he was the whole time was a place they're calling Mir Caliban, because they got lazy in writing.
He was in the Upside Down.
Yeah. The Lion can go in and out of this Mir Caliban whenever he wants. And once he's in Mir Caliban, by the way, isn't like the thing that gives you a reflection. And my pronunciations can be sometimes a little bit difficult in these things. If he's sitting in Mir Caliban, all he has to do is focus on where he wants to be, and he can get there. And so, but what makes this really powerful, though, is it's not just him that can go. He can bring people with him. So Stargate.
That's or the Stargate.
No, yeah, it's like the Doctor Strange.
Yeah, he can. Well, he has to go back in and then back out, kind of
thing. Yeah. So anyway, that's how he's able to jump
around. They don't exactly tell you how many he can take with him.
Yeah. So the first thing the Lion does, though, is he starts to reclaim his legion and reunify it. And he renames the Fallen the Risen. Not all of the Fallen, by the way, just the ones who are still loyals.
I mean, it's a big deal in this. He has one of the best lines, though. Because when he tells the guy, you know, how do you know that I'll be the risen? He says, you still have your head on your shoulders. Because the lion apparently also now has kind of judgment gaze to find out if you're guilty or not.
Yeah.
And he,
if you're loyal, he knows. If you're a traitor, you're going to know.
There's we talked about this when we did that cast. The interrogated chaplains exist. So
he starts teleporting all around the galaxy, building up his retinue. I got yelled at for this. Not yelled at. I got properly corrected. 43 years of age. Was pronouncing a word wrong the whole time.
What were you even saying?
Retune.
How do you mess that word
up? I don't know.
Continue.
Anyway, retinue, whatever. Anyway, so to aid these risen in the redemption arcs, he's helping them battle the forces of chaos. And they progress exactly as you'd expect in the Excalibur ripoff. The lion does a bunch of great things, but then he gets overwhelmed. And just before the bad guys start to monologue and talk about how easy he was to defeat and blah, blah, blah. And then his, you know, risen compatriots are able to step up and save him at the last second, thereby showing not only their loyalty, but also their value. I mean, look, they're not that bad, but there's just levels to trope that I just struggle with.
Embrace the trope, John. Embrace.
While back, he then, of course, has another little mini quest where he goes back to Mirror Caliban and discovers that somewhere in this incredible realm. Sorry, actually, I do dislike this. Now that I hear my tone, I do dislike this.
Really?
Yeah.
Wasn't picking that up at all, buddy.
Jesus. And there's a special sword and shield hidden somewhere, and he has to go find it. And he goes, and he finds the power sword called Fealty and a shield named the Emperor's Shield.
Which both look super badass on this model.
Oh, the model's awesome. The model's absolutely awesome. And these two, just like, by the way, every Primarch has a special sword and either shield or something else. But anyway, that's that. Problem is that the lion isn't done yet from a GW writing standpoint, because GW has to sell models.
He has to save the day.
And they released an Angron and a lion back to back. So we have to do something about this. Angron is kind of on a tear, and just as Angron is about to kill Dante from the Blood Angels, the lion shows up literally out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And Angron just like, why are you here?
With also a shit ton of dudes.
So. Yeah. Angron and the lion get into it. And I will say, Angron's 4 or 5 times the size of the lion.
He's also 0-84 and 1 versus boss battles.
Yeah. Other way around. 1-84. Angron.
Oh, I gave him
I gave him
one draw.
Oh, there you go. 0-84-1. Yeah, good point. There it is. Needless to say, the lion beats the crap out of Angron. He stabs with his power sword, breaks his face with his shield, and then cuts his head off. Although he does come back eight weeks, eight days, and eight hours later. So whatever. After this, the lion does discover that he still has a brother alive in the galaxy, and it's Gilliman, to which his response is, oh, great, Gilliman.
Also, remember how he said, oh, Bobby G was not super excited about the state of the Imperium? The lion does not handle it as gracefully as
no, Gilliman did. Bobby G decides to go back to the Terra and take control and reorganize it. The lion decides to go planet to planet.
He is bent.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to do a world tour of ass kicking.
Yeah.
Because you guys all suck.
Yeah, the stories are funny where he arrives on a planet and the Imperial governor comes out to greet him and he just basically shoves him to the side and just keeps walking to go find the people and rise the people up and give them a round.
Again, he's also got his new, I do like whatever his judgment gaze is.
That's cool as hell.
Yeah. He has the whole like ability to see evil now.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what he's doing. He's going to these planets he's going to the place to hunt down. He's an inquisitor is actually the best way to look at it. But like the most powerful
inquisitor ever.
Yeah. So that's kind of where he is now.
We haven't moved the writing. That's the latest thing to happen.
But yeah. But to recap for the loyalist Primarchs, you have Gilliman is running the Imperium. Every other Primarch except for the Lion is missing or dead.
Yep.
And the Lion just got back and he's kind of doing his own thing, hunting down chaos.
I hope they push that. I know we're trying to say we're I want more of him. I'd like to see Lehman come back or either one.
Lehman or Volkan. I think I just like I expect it to be Lehman.
Lion's going to do his thing, but the Lion's always done his thing.
Yeah.
G-Man is just the guy in charge.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to see Volkan go on either a Holy Crusade or Lehman just go on.
I mean, by the time
a Thunderdome,
not by the time this comes up, by the time a lot of you will actually listen to this, truthfully, will know this one. But I'm kind of, I understand that they're going to release Emperor's Children, which means we're probably going to get a Fulgrim.
For sure.
But I don't really love the idea of having a 4-2 ratio of Chaos Primarchs to
so said, but you could really help the story though with either Lehman or Volkan.
Yeah, more with Lehman.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is Vulcan's interesting. The problem with Vulcan is like
Lehman's like super popular too.
Well, it's also Vulcan's a weird model because it's like so in a 2+ he just basically a cell, it's Saint Celestine type thing where he just comes back to life.
Well, he's also somewhere. Like, how do you model him? He's huge.
Yeah.
So like huge. He almost looks Demon Primarch status at that point. He's so much bigger than
that's right. I always forget he was the large of the Primarchs. Yeah. Yeah. Forgot about that.
But he's so, yeah. He's way bigger than everybody else.
Yeah. What's what they did with the Custodes and make him the exact same size as everything else?
That would be so annoying.
All right. But anyway, as you guys know, that's the end of this cast. So next week, we're going to, you know, do the most requested, at least for me, series of casts, the Tao.
I love your preparation for this, by the way.
So I haven't read a single thing on the Tao, but I did watch Hot Fuzz. So I'm ready for the greater good. I've just begun it, actually, and discovered the XCOM ripoff that's very evident in the middle, in the very first codex.
Well, I did tell you about this.
Yeah.
And you said that at lunch.
Yeah, we were at lunch, and Brad, we're walking through the Ethereals, and I was just like, so the Ethereals from XCOM? And Brad didn't really play a lot of XCOM, nor knew as much as I did. And yeah, so get ready, Tau players. This is going to be fun.
I got your back, guys.
Brad does like your army. That makes one of us. Do I do an entire episode in the Shield Drone? Just in how much I hate Shield Drones?
Just 55 straight minutes.
Of just rage.
Yeah. Just make weird sounds in the microphone.
Of just Shield Drones on the bottom floor with a riptide on the top floor. So it's, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, that makes me mad thinking of it.
No, no. Never forget, never forgive. No. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. Ugh. It's actually worse than the, was it, is it the Iron, no, who was it? The Iron Hands.
Iron Hands.
Iron Hands Primaris Marines throwing themselves
off
into the wood chipper.
The Dreadnought.
Yes, so that the Leviathan Dreadnought wouldn't take a damage.
So annoying. Boo.
All right. Anyway, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.